welcome to Minute 26 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob.
I'm Tom.
And joining us today is Justin from Stinker Madness.
Hello.
That's all you got to say, hello.
Man of many words, right? Right?
Apparently. I mean, anyone who's listened to you knows that you're not, but...
Oh, hey.
I'm kidding. Everyone who's heard you knows that you are a man of many words.
Yeah, so you stick a microphone in front of me and I got a case of the jabber jaws.
Okay, that's fine. Just, you know, as long as we don't go too long, we're good. So that's all right. So episode 26 starts off with Ives having a discussion about birds, and it goes all the way until the end where Danny says, as the sergeant out there says, and then that gets cut off. So we'll have to talk about that one tomorrow, what he says afterwards. So no, it's just, I found it very interesting that this minute starts off, you know, when once again, they're trying to dumb down a lot of the British slang and conversations so that Americans, you know, will feel more at home in this type of movie. I mean, obviously, that's what happens in the 1960s when they made movies like this. You know, you wanted something for the American audience. And when you have a film that's 95%+ British, you need to find a way to get the Americans to actually want to see the movie and feel more of a connection to it. So, you know, when Ives starts talking about birds, obviously Hiltz is a little preoccupied at the time. But then he goes, don't you have them in the States? And he goes, what? And he says, so he starts explaining what he's talking about with birds. He's actually talking about girls, which, you know, most of us at this point know what he's talking about. So it's basically the tail end of their conversation that we started talking about last week. Then, you know, at the beginning of this whole conversation between Hiltz and Ives, they're talking pretty loudly so that any guards who are nearby can actually hear them. And then Hiltz switches to a whisper when he's looking at the clay and gravel that he seems to find in the cell, which is also a little strange that he actually finds it in the cell, because it's not like, you know, this is a place where he's been for that was built a long time ago. That this was just built. So that's how this whole minute starts off. So Justin, why don't you give us a little of your background with this movie? How did you get into it? You know, when did you first see it? Why is it among one of your favorite movies or not? I know it is, but I'm just saying that anyway.
I think I first saw this probably when I was, it was before I was 10 years old. My mother introduced me to it, and my mother and I have a very strange movie relationship where she wasn't a big fan of quality films. She mostly liked silly films. Like, she would get very passionate, intense and on the edge of her seat while watching such fine films as, say, RoboCop 3. She would scream at James Bond movies like they were really happening. But then every now and then she had this weird thing where she was obsessed with World War II movies, even though she wasn't alive during that period or knew anybody that served. And this was one of those films like, oh, you've got to watch this. And of course I'm between the ages of 8 and 10, and Steve McQueen is jumping motorcycles in it. And I'm like, this is the raddest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It was.
Yeah, but you have to wait until the end of the movie to see that.
Right. But I knew it was coming. I think it was on the cover of the VHS tape that we have. So years later, I go on and I learn, you know, a lot about film. I go to some film school and was reintroduced to The Great Escape during those college years. And I was like, oh, my God, this movie's just insanely good and entertaining. And then about 20 years later, I rewatched it and I was like, wait, there's a lot more going on in this movie than just fun action. So I do think it's definitely fitting as one of the notoriously greatest movies considered of all time, because A, the cast is fantastic, and B, it's accessible to basically anybody, and it's a true story, and it ends in a very tragic manner, and that you don't even realize what's going on in these people's minds until you've really got things dialed in on this thing. So yeah, I think all the way around it's near 10 out of 10.
Okay, that's the way I would rate it also. And as everyone's already heard, you know, I also first got introduced to this as a kid, and Tom also mentioned that he got first introduced to it as a kid. So I think it's the type of movie that has put a stamp on all of us, at least the three of us, from an early age. Which still has apparently carried over the decades.
I've still got a full poster of Steve McQueen on the motorcycle in my garage. So there you go.
Do you have a motorcycle?
I used to. I just sold it actually 2 days ago, and it was when I was shopping for motorcycles. You know, I'd never owned one before, and this is related, believe it or not. A lot of people were like, "Oh, get the crotch rockets. You know, you can do wheelies and wrap yourself around a telephone pole really easily." And I'm like, "No, that doesn't sound good." Oh, well, then get a chopper. You can make lots of noise and go on road trips and look tough and with a leather jacket. And I'm like, "No, that doesn't sound good."
And say Zed's dead. You can then when you have a chopper, you can say Zed's dead, baby.
Right, exactly. So then I was like, wait. No, I want Steve McQueen's motorcycle. I just want a motorcycle. I don't want it to be any of these specialized things. I just want what's called a motorcycle. And sure enough, I found it. But it was gutless, but it looked like a motorcycle. So it was all because I wanted this movie.
And did you try jumping over a fence between Germany and Switzerland?
Yeah, I did. It went about as good as you can imagine. It was an international event, and I had to apologize in front of the Hog. So,
okay. Well, as long as they use rubber barbed wire like they did in this movie, so you should be fine.
Phone books.
It was even
phone
if books. You crashed.
Yeah, they beat me with the phone books. The barbed wire was no problem, but yeah.
Switzerland's at least a small country, so hopefully the phone books aren't too thick.
I love it.
Hey, come on. It depends on what you consider a small country. I live in a country with 9 million people. I think that's a big country. You know, yeah. It all depends on perspective. That's the way this all works.
So the thing we get in this minute is, and obviously we've got a bunch of these spur of the moment, let's jump in the back of a truck, escape attempts leading up to this. But we get Hiltz giving the first plan of escape, or we get at least our first illusions of, okay, let's think about this for more than 30 seconds. And it foreshadows how they're going to escape at the end. Yeah, because it's, well, you can do a tunnel for two people one way, but how do you take that, scale it up, so now all of a sudden you're going to try to do a tunnel for 250 people.
Right, that's true. I mean, I love the way that as you said, that they alluded to the whole fact of how you can try to escape, and Ives then says, yeah, but you need a lot of boards to shore it up and everything like that. And someone who's never seen it before or knows nothing about tunneling, which obviously most people don't know anything about tunneling, especially from a German prison camp. But you, if you've seen the movie before, so then you know what they're talking about, or if you've read the book, because the book describes it quite in detail, the whole idea of how you actually shore up the space as you're moving through. So they do a great job with that. And I love the fact that it's basically Hiltz's idea to try to get out of here by digging. Obviously, everyone else has the same ideas, but he's the first one to express that to us, you know, as viewers, the whole thing. And the way that he starts saying to Ives, okay, how far do you think you can get in 8 hours? So it's pretty amazing that you have these characters that actually have thought these things through. I mean, we talked weeks ago about the whole thing with Danny and Willie, looking at the from the fence to the forest, trying to figure out, okay, how far is that? I mean, they need Cavendish to actually do the real survey, even though he's a terrible surveyor, as we've also discussed. Right. So it's interesting that you have, these flyers who basically, over the course of their internment, have been able to master different types of skills, I guess you can say, about digging and about trying to escape and finding, interesting ways to get out of this place. So I found it interesting that if I remember correctly, they don't mention the distance. He just says, how far can you go? Mm-hmm. He looks out the window and then he goes, how far can you go? And it's pretty strange, that you wouldn't normally ask someone that question. Like, if you think about it, if you look out the window and how far is it from your house to the street, and then you go, how far can you dig? So
I think it's interesting that you bring that up, that it's Ives' idea, Whereas that's not what he's specifically, you know, each of these guys kind of have, you know, let's say like a Danny Ocean style specific set of skills. Yet Ives, his name isn't the Mole. It's not Tunnel King. And we've got guys in this movie named the Mole and Tunnel King, yet it's not their idea to dig out.
I gotta stop you there, Justin. Ives is the Mole.
No, I'm sorry. Hiltz.
Hiltz is not the Mole. Hiltz yeah. is good at sitting in jail. That's his job.
It's his idea to bust out of there, but he's not a guy named the Mole, right? You know what I mean? That they made that choice that it was Steve McQueen's character that comes up with this, wait a minute, we've got Clay in here. What if we dug? Not the guys that are named Tunnel King and Mole.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I mean, I also found it interesting. I had to have to look up the word. I didn't even notice it before. That basically, you know, when he asks Ives a question, so Ives basically says, I can cut through the dirt like a bit on the end of an auger. And I had no idea what the hell an auger was. So I had to look it up. It's a drill for making holes in wood or in the ground. And I mean, according to the pictures that I saw online, it's like a tractor with this really big drill bit on the side, on the end of it. So it's interesting that that's basically the way he describes himself, you know, that he can get through the dirt. And then he goes, but the dirt's not the problem here. He says it's shoring up the wood and storing the dirt. Which later on in the movie we'll discuss about how they actually store the dirt, but the book explains also they had ingenious ways of doing it, things that are never even mentioned in the movie, which we'll get to in a few weeks. Don't want to spoil that bit of information from you.
They watched Naked Gun 33 and a third, I think that's what they did, and learned all methods from that movie.
It could be.
Yeah. You know,
I got to say that's the one I don't really remember that well. Even it has the Oscars. I'm a big Oscar fan, and that's the one with the Oscars. But
No. He has to bust out of prison in that one, and it's directly stolen from this movie in comedic fashion. How they get out?
Well, I'll have to watch that again just to see how he gets out. Oh, I think he, like, they show him popping up his head in a whole bunch of different places, right?
They have a baseball game, and he's got dirt in his pants, and so he takes dirt out of his pants, and then it basically comes this huge mountain at the home plate.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, now I remember that fact. And then I love the way that McQueen then says to Ives, he goes, "What do you call a mole in Scotland?" You know. And again, this is something that's just, you know, placating to the Americanism of the whole thing. They're trying to show, okay, you know, here you have characters that are trying to be more international. So maybe there's like this special word that they use in Scotland, you know, for a mole. And then I just retorts back, a mole, what do you think?
I'm going to deduct half a star just for that line. Because, and it's not this movie's fault, it makes me specifically think of that line in X-Men where Storm is about to, you know, she's fighting Toad and she says, what happens to a Toad when it gets struck by electricity? The same thing as everything else. And it's such a groan-inducing line, and I hate it so bad that anything that gets close to that realm, I instantly go back to that and it makes me revulsed inside of myself. So I have to take it away from this movie.
Right. I can understand that. And I also like the way that they keep us in suspense with what his idea is here. You know, he doesn't really tell his idea. We're not going to hear about his idea even this week. His idea is only going to come out next week. You know, they tease it a little bit. This is like a way of teasing what's going to happen in the future by talking about it. Because he goes, what are you going to do with the dirt? And he says, that's when he mentions about the mole. Which I don't really know when I guess that actually does make sense, because a mole moves the dirt behind them, which is more or less what they choose to do. So I guess for someone, you know, who's seen the movie, they can figure out what it is that they're actually going to do. And then after they finish in this discussion with the two of them, they take us outside again. So we get to see a whole bunch of the other characters once again. We see them like lounging around, you know, they're all standing outside waiting. You know, near the barracks, you have Ashley Pitt, McDonald, Danny, Willie, Henley. Yeah, basically, most of the ex, the future ex committee of the camp. You know, they're just talking around. You know, I love how they go, well, the first thing Hadley says to Ashley Pitt, so what do you think, Navy? You know, because as we mentioned a few weeks ago, Ashley Pitt's a Navy flyer, and he's pretty much the only one that is prominently featured here. So I thought that was a funny way of, you know, expressing it, that they're basically somewhat looking, they know his skills and they know how important he is to the whole X organization, but they still, you know, play it down a little bit about, you know, you're from the Navy, you're not from the Air Force like the rest of us. And you get to see Sedgwick, you know, in the background with all of them. Again, someone who hasn't seen this movie before doesn't know who these characters are, and they don't really realize the way that they're framing all of these characters in the same place. I mean, throughout the, as we discussed over the last few weeks, a lot of times you have most of the prisoners loitering around, and they're walking around in ones or twos. You rarely have more than that if you look at all the characters in the background. And here you get a scene where they're putting six characters right in the same frame, which again, as we've discussed many times, that also shows the ensemble cast, the way that this movie was made is that there's no one who's more important than everyone else. They need to all be there. They all have their little parts, as you mentioned, the Ocean's 11 connection earlier. You know, everyone has their own parts. You see it in a lot of heist movies, basically. You know, this guy, this is his specialty, and this is his specialty, and this is his specialty, and then you put them all together, and then they're able to do the heist. In this film, basically, you have a lot of actors who were recognizable at the time, who obviously some of them had big careers before, some of them had big careers following this movie. Here, you just put them all together in the same frame, which, again, shows that they're all of equal status. They're all equal stature along the way.
Except for Steve McQueen isn't in the frame.
Well, because Steve McQueen is, as far as he's concerned, he's above everyone else.
Yes.
There's no question about that.
Right.
You know, he does get his name first in the credits, which, you know, as anyone who knows about Steve McQueen's history, in many movies, he said, if I'm not the first in the credits, I'm not going to be in your movie, which is why the whole Towering Inferno travesty happened, you know, with the... You know, there they actually were down to counting words to make sure that they all have, that he and Paul Newman have the same amount of lines throughout the movie. And then I love the line right after that where I think it's McDonald that says, interesting first 20 minutes. You know, the movie's actually been going on for 26 minutes, but as we know, the first 5 minutes, nothing happens. So it pretty much is true to form by saying that. You know, it's I guess you can sort of say that these 20 minutes are in real time. So I think that's a great way of looking at it.
Which is surprising because so much happens during that 20 minutes. I mean, they try like 20 times to escape this prison. I mean, all on the fly. These guys are busy. They're getters. They don't, they're not ones to procrastinate. Like, let's get this stuff done.
They gave them a lot of time to think on the truck right over. You know, we're going to put you in trucks for 3-4 hours and travel across Germany or however long, you know, those truck rides were. So obviously they're all going to talk and trying to think of, okay, what have you tried doing? And they're going to be, you know, baking secrets one to the other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then I love the fact that Willie says that we've made fools of ourselves, which anyone who looks at what happened, you know that they didn't make fools of themselves. They actually showed that that they're able to think fast and try to think of different ideas. The fact that Strachwitz, you know, forgave most of them, helped them. You know, not everyone is like Hiltz where, you know, you piss off someone too much so you're going to actually sit in the cooler for 20 days. Do either of you have anything else for this minute?
Not specific to this one, no.
Okay, well, we're only specifically talking about this one.
Let's jump to minute 57.
If you want to talk about it, you got to come tomorrow to listen to the next minute. Basically, the funny thing here also is that the last line of this minute is Charles Bronson saying, as the sergeant out there said, this is only the first day, which, again... is foreshadowing about how much they're actually going to try to do over the course of the time that they're going to be in this camp. Obviously, the movie truncates the whole storyline, but the real storyline took place over a year. And they, for anyone who's read the book, have you read the book, Justin?
I haven't.
Okay. You should get around to trying to find a copy of it, because it's, especially someone who knows the movie well, when you're reading it, it fills in a lot of gaps at, on the one hand. On the other hand, it distorts everything because it's telling the truth. Or actually, let me rephrase that. The movie is actually what distorts everything. But someone who's seen the movie so much, you know, I was reading the book and I'm saying, well, this didn't happen in the movie, so how could it really happen? I got to give a lot of credit to the screenwriters who definitely did a great job of taking the real story that in itself is exciting. And then James Clavell and W.R. Burnett, and they took something that's so exciting and they made it even more exciting in a completely different way where it doesn't detract from the real story. Do either have anything else to say?
Nope.
All right. You can contact us by email to thegreatminute@gmail.com. Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And our Twitter handle is greatescapemxm. So, Justin, do you have anything you want to plug here at the end?
You can find me at stinkermadness.com, the podcast about bad movies for bad movie lovers by bad movie lovers, and then follow us on all of the socials /stinkermadness.
All right. You want to come back and join us tomorrow?
I would love to. I've got a lot to say.
Okay, good. I'm glad. All right. So we'll see everyone tomorrow. Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.